Isn't today great? Today is such a great day. Everything is so great.
We're going to have a lot of fun. We got some wonderful people for you.
All you mommies and daddies out there who complain to the radio station, I got something to say to you.
And the first thing you've got to do is say the call letters properly. Okay?
It's an incredible metamorphosis of love and emotion and sensitivity and tenderness and fun and joy and happiness.
Did you know that this show represents health and hope?
Oh yeah, it's a great day for music and musings on the Amy Beth Arkaway Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. So how are ya? We're going to let the music do most of the talking as we dip into the Americana folk file, sample some great music, and talk with the rising singer-songwriter Jeremy Parsons. We'll talk about his inspirations and aspirations, and we'll sample his sound from his latest collection, Things I Need to Say. We'll take on the cultural cacophony, too, in measured doses, inspiration to action, sound success stories, and you in the mix. Are you listening live? It is Tuesday, May 22nd, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east, number in motion, 347-857-4505. Hey, Twitter, you know, 24/7, dive in when it works for you, live or on podcast, Davey writes. Our Facebook page, our Pop in the Chat Box, open for the show, so tells us our TCS crew, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, raring to go, and ML at headquarters. Show today brought to you in part by Panera, the way food should be, now delivered. Also by Audiophile, music, books, podcasts, caress your ears with everything you want to hear from Audiophile. And by Dunkin' Donuts. The universe runs on Dunkin', now featuring a great collection and selection of iced culottes and iced teas at our pals at PopNet. Arts, culture, and conversation on air, online. PopNet features select editions of the Amy Beth Arkaway Show and those robust roundtables. Details on social media. Well, let's get started before we chat with Jeremy to sample his sound. This one, I think, was the first single to roll off the collection, Things You Need to Say. It's a good one called Burn This House Down. Jeremy Parsons kicking open another lively edition of the Amy Beth Arkaway Show.
I can't go on like this. that it couldn't be. With an old matchbook and a can of gas, I said goodbye to what we had. Two-story reminder of a love that didn't work out. I knew I had to burn this house down. Oh yeah, I knew I had to burn this house down.
What a great sound. Jeremy Parsons, Burn This House Down on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Hear strains of Lyle Lovett, Jason Isbell, John Prine, and a sound all his own. New album is out called Things I Need to Say, and I listened to the whole thing, I'll tell you. Not a clunker among the songs. Jeremy Parsons, congratulations on the album, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, and thank you for all the kind words. I've never gotten Lyle Lovett, but I do love me some Lyle Lovett. That's high praise right there. I'll take it.
Well, there you go. It's your own sound, though. You know, I don't like to. I mean, you hear the strains of influence, but you do have your own unique sound too. So that's also the compliment, I think, that you make it your own.
That is the biggest.
Yeah, right. And you grew up in Texas, right? Born and bred?
Absolutely. Yes. Born and bred in San Antonio, a.k.a. Northern Mexico is what we call it, I think.
Right. So you have this wide, kind of an interesting, eclectic blend of influences, right? Talk a little bit about who influenced you along the way.
It's everyone from a lot of George Strait down there. So obviously, mm-hmm. I think that was... I went and saw him every time he was in San Antonio when he wasn't just at home, and then a lot of a traditional style music. My dad was really into Hank Williams Sr. and Bob Wills, and I love that Western swing sound, anything with a groove to it. And Kalijah by Hank Williams Sr. was probably the first song I ever reacted to as a as an infant, I would say. I just started, you know, shaking my hands in the air with that big Indian, that kind of tom drum beat that they had, that dum 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 dum.
Yeah, yeah.
Later I got into I guess as everyone does as they grow up, the 90s was really good for music, so there was just all kinds of great stuff coming out then. So my sisters got me into more into the into the pop realm, and then Texas country blew up in early 2000s, and I was right there in the heart of that. I got a job at a musical venue down there and started getting to hang out with a lot of those singer songwriters, which eventually became the part of the Americana movement that's really so hot right now. So I got to be around at the forefront of that, which was really fun.
That's terrific, yeah. That's a great education, right? Right in real time, hanging out with folks who became your peers, essentially, as you went along the way. You're not really strictly country. That's why you have the early country roots, but you really are more in the – your sound is kind of more in that Americana folk kind of genre. It's kind of evolved into that, I guess.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I used to do more of that, the traditional thing, but I think we all, we just grow as people and as artists, you know, we kind of do this thing for a while, and it becomes something that it was almost not like phase isn't a good thing, but you know, you have your 5-year growth stint or something, and you're like, oh hey, it's, you know, you vocally grow too, so you're like, I feel more comfortable to push myself in these ways. I think you never know where it's gonna land in 5 more years either too. So
exactly, that's an interesting point. Well, you're finding your voice. You're finding you're finding your niche. You're finding your voice, and you keep growing as an artist, which I think is the way to do it. You know, to approach it organically.
Evolution.
And see where
that's what it
leads. So, now you've been doing this for a while, though. I mean, so you've been on the circuit. You're not brand spanking new. You've been doing this for a while, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I did it for a little bit down there in Texas, as you know, everyone go wherever they're from. They cut their teeth there for a little bit, and then venture out of the nest for a little bit. I've been doing this now professionally for over 10 years, I would say, and I'm proud to say. But I did probably about 2.5-3 years in Texas, and then came up to Nashville, and have been bouncing all over the place ever since. I've gotten to go to Norway, been all over the U.S., going to New York next month, so I'm super stoked about that. It's just a continuous wild ride, and you try to just stay seated.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Texas, of course, Austin has a great musical tradition as being a hub of that singer-songwriter Americana country kind of thing, and the Nashville, of course, is Music City. Are you doing collaborations in Nashville? Do you find yourself, what's your songwriting process like? You write most of the songs by yourself, or do you collaborate? How does it work for you?
I do. I when I was first coming up, I strictly wrote by myself because it was just so interesting to me to think of like splitting your brain with someone like that. It was like, oh, how could they possibly wrap their mind around the thought that I just had? But then when you get up here, you start getting into it more because you see you develop all these relationships with people, and it just becomes kind of just sitting in the room like telling a story with friends. So lately, I've done more collaborative stuff, I'd say, over the past 5 years, and I feel like I do even more so every year. But I usually, when I'm writing my stuff, I usually go off and do it by myself. But on a rare occasion, I'll write with some other people for me. But usually, it's if they come and people are coming to co-write with me, it's because they. They have a specific thing they want to write for someone else or for themselves that they feel that I can meet them halfway on.
Ah, I see. So you're also the songwriter for other people. That's kind of interesting when you hear your work come out of other people's mouths. That must be fascinating too, right?
Oh, it's so flattering. I mean, and like I said, you never think that could be a thing, but then you hear it happen. It's like you get to hear someone sing something a way that you wouldn't have thought to sing it. And that's always really fun. It's like, you know, I don't know what a good example would be, but it's just, it's so moving. It's inspiring in a way. It's cool. It's like, oh, wow, like we wrote that. That's great.
Yeah. Well, I think it's sort of, I guess it's akin to, I'm also a writer and as a playwright, it's fascinating to see people, actors, take your work and interpret it and are on the stage and saying your words. And that's, so I guess the analogous to the rush that you're probably feeling when other people are singing your words.
That's a perfect example. That's exactly right. That's got to be amazing. I can't imagine. That's so cool.
It's very cool, yeah. And if it's a comedy, and I had a couple of those, when you hear the audience laugh, that's what a rush that is. That's great. I got to say.
Oh, yeah. That's,
the drama,
that's,
you got to wait for the reaction
right
at the
there,
end.
That's great.
Great fun. But talk to us a little bit about the way you said you write yourself. Do you go to your, is it something that you discipline yourself and every day I'm going to sit down and write? Or obviously you're balancing your career in terms of performing as well. So do you carve out a certain time, or do you wait for the inspiration to sort of hit you in terms of when you're going to do it?
I think for me it's important to wait for the inspiration to hit me. As much as, like, you know, if like you haven't written in a week or something, you get this deal, it's like, oh, I'm never going to write again.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, that's always irrational. I think that just every artist does stuff like that. They panic because it's their livelihood and everything. But I like to wait for the inspiration to find me because it always, I'm able to get the message across. Like once I know what I'm feeling, I'm able to put that on paper, and then, you know, maybe someone else can compare with it too. It's important to wait for that to find me, because I feel like it's always been more powerful when it comes from that place.
So you're ready. In other words, when it sort of hits you, you kind of know it's coming up, you better get ready to sit down and, or how do you do it? Do you write it down, or you have like a tape recorder? I mean, we have so many different ways of doing it nowadays, you know?
Yeah, see, that is the technology. Like, every time people cuss about technology, I'm like, man, I'm just glad that I have the notes section and the voice memo thing on my phone, because I would be mad at all the songs that I would have forgotten. But yeah, I usually, if I'm around the house, sometimes during the week, I have, like, specifically the beginning of the week, I have a lot of free time during the day. So I'll have a notepad with a pen just sitting there ready and open just in case something grabs me. And there's pretty much a guitar in every room, so it's I'm prepped for my own for the song to find me. Yeah, you know, it's like being ready to operate.
There you go. Yeah. The muses will find you. I always say you got to get ready though, and when they come, you got to act on it. Otherwise, they're going to find somebody else, some other conduit to go to. You know, so be ready. Don't ignore it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a gift, man. You got to, it's like waiting for a package from UPS. You got to be ready to sign for it.
Great. I like that. Yeah, exactly. You got to be ready. You got to be ready and willing and eager to get that package and open it up and see what's inside. And there's work to it, too, right? I mean, a lot of people say, you know, this is one of the myths of creativity, that you're just so lucky because you have all these ideas and things just come to you. And it's like, yeah, there is some luck to it, but the alchemy really happens once you're willing to put the work in, because there is some elbow grease involved, and there's some days that things aren't coming too well, or, you know, you got to hone it, you got to work it. People have to appreciate that too, right? Do you think people sometimes think it's so, magical? And there's a magic to it, but there's also a work part to it. Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's like two ends of that too. There's the people who are like, oh man, that must be great. And then there's other people that are like, oh, that's not a job. And I was like, you know, I get that. It's different, but like it's our job is to entertain people and make them, you know, forget about, you know, when we're playing on a weekend, it's fun to see someone in the front row who's like, you know, just drinking and having a good time, dancing, singing along and stuff. And you know that they're there because maybe earlier that day work wasn't so good. You know, they needed to get away and forget about work. So that's our job. Our job is to take a person out of whatever mindset they could have been in that could have been bad, you know, prior to coming in and getting lost in the music or something. So, you know, that I think we always play our roles, but like, you know, as well as we can for sure. And try to take people on that journey away from not so much reality, but just remember that there's good parts of reality too, you know?
Yeah, sure. You're transporting. I mean, music definitely can do that in a way that really nothing else can. I mean, it really does transport you. And I always say it transcends everything. It is like the universal language. It cuts through everything. So,
yeah.
Art
in general,
problems,
man. You're talking about the plays and stuff, too. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. When people were talking about, for example, Roseanne coming back, and there was a lot of controversy, I guess, around is she a Trump supporter and the show is going to be pro-Trump or anti-Trump, and it's like, really, I think they've handled it well if you've watched it, just as an example, because they do take on both sides. And the way fiction can do that and the way music can do that, it sort of transcends when we get into political discourse and everybody goes into their echo chambers and their corners and they're mad at each other and it's all that kind of stuff. So I think that, yeah, you're right. It can sort of shed light on both sides and bring people together. That's kind of the objective. I think the best kind of art does that. But music in particular, because it's all above all of this stuff. It doesn't, you know, in so many ways that and can make people happy and evoke emotions, you know, sad too. And you remember where your favorite, you know, where you were when your favorite songs were first coming out and all those kinds of things. I mean, it's just a special, special thing. But when you're performing, I mean, do you like, you have such an all-encompassing career because you're doing the writing, the recording, and also performing. Is there one aspect that you like better than the others, or you feel it's a more of a natural fit, or you just like the whole shebang?
Man, yeah, that is tough. And I feel like that might change. Writing is always something for me, like it's therapy. Like when I sit down to write, it's because something I need to, like, you know, release a valve on my brain or something, like air it out for a little bit. So that's always got its own perk. But there really isn't anything like performing for a crowd that's really into it, happy to see you. You know, they're giving it to you just as much as you're giving it to them. That is a otherworldly rush. And there's no, you know, I've seen people try to match it with drugs or alcohol and stuff, but that you can't ever get there, man. That's just a natural, because it's so natural. Like, it's just happening. Like, that's everyone's serotonin just clashing.
Yeah, very great description of it. It's that energy. I mean, it's that energy exchange. You know, you're performing, right? You get that. Yeah. And every performance is different. And so, like, if you feel low one night, I mean, you were talking about how you take it so seriously that you know that you're there and the people who are sitting there had their own daily woes or travails or whatever was going on in their life, and you're there to help them. I mean, if you're feeling low, when you hit the stage, do you suddenly get a rush where you're, you know, in a better place? Or how do you get yourself out of a low day on the stage or cope with it?
I think that's the thing is like, it, part of the job is you have to, even if you're there, you have to act like you're not, like it's not about you. So it's one of those. I did a show, for example, this is years ago. I was talking to this girl and she ended up being crazy, so it didn't work out. But she had called me right before
I got on
stage.
Hey, when that happens, Jeremy, right?
I know, right? It does happen, though. I guess that's the point.
I know. I know it does.
The, it happens to the best of us and the rest of us. Yeah. She called me before I went on stage, and I was playing a show in South Dakota, and it was a benefit thing. So it was, I wanted to be in good spirits, and it was just not a good phone conversation. And I went up there, and like first song in, like I could tell that the crowd was like, "What's going on?" And I just looked at him. I was like, "Guys, y'all ever been in a bad relationship?" And I just started talking to him about that, and we all started laughing. And the crowd in that situation pulled me out of that headspace. Like, had they not been in there, I might have sat on it for like hours. So like, every now and then, it's just like people helping people, which is really nice.
Yeah, oh, that's true. We are all people, and artists are people too. And you're performing, and some days may be better than others. But you take it so seriously that you obviously want to do your best and overcome it. And I think that's great. That whole energy exchange where the audience is helping you out too. That's a real thing, and that's what people that comes through. I think in your music, and that comes through in your performance. If you're relating, you have the authenticity and the connection with the audience, which clearly is important to you. And like I said, this new album that you have out, I listened to the whole thing, and I talked about it. I think we had a scheduling snafu, so I was talking about you the other week, and I just said to people, you got to listen to this album. It's really good because I don't think there's a clunker on it, and they're all good songs, and you got a real good sound, and I wish you the best. I mean, talk a little bit about, before you go, just about how the music business has changed over that. You've been doing it for 10 years, and it's easier in some ways to get your music out there, but it's also harder to make a living. Is that right? In terms of recording, anyway. I guess if you make a living out of performing, you're okay, but the recording industry is so hard for artists these days to make a living. Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And specifically with the indie market, they're working out everything with the they're trying to work out everything with like the digital sources like Spotify and everything, and everyone getting their royalties, which that's always an uphill battle, and who knows if they'll ever fix it. But yeah, it has changed a lot. Like 10 years ago, they encouraged you to print physical copies of CDs, and it was like vinyl was a waste of time. And then 5 years later, it's don't print CDs, and vinyl is still selling like better than it was 20 years ago.
Yeah, resurgence.
So it's funny, man. It's a constant change. I mean, it's just like life in general. If you look at the music industry as like someone who constantly changes their hairstyle, that's how I like to think of it.
Yeah. So when you plan, how do you plan? So you're planning that, where do you get your largest, your livelihood is primarily from performing at this point, right? And do you project that out? Is that going to be the wave of the future for you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Performing is always where it is. One, because you build relationships, and you can sell physical copies at shows. You can sell merch and there's nothing against the digital sources. Like Spotify gets your music out there. Like if you don't have CDs on you, like it's the best way to go. Like, hey, check me out on iTunes, check me out on Spotify. It's like you don't have to, if you pay for Spotify, you pretty much already bought the record. So it's all good resources that we can use and tap into. But it's always fun to think about where it'll be in 5 years. If they're going to go back to laser disc or just inject the song into someone's brain or who knows.
those earworms, they get injected. Believe me, there's a way to get injected. That's funny.
Yeah, there you go.
And you might have like a big hit song. You never know. You'll get a lot of royalties just keep pouring in if you get like some big artist, somebody to, Kelly Clarkson or somebody there'll always be, I guess, those really big artists that will make some money somehow at the record. So the songs, they get played over and over again, the royalties will kick in. So that's always a possibility, too.
Oh, absolutely. I would be okay with that. I'm a Kelly Clarkson fan. I could definitely be a fan of anybody if they were big enough and cut my song like that.
Exactly. You'll rapidly become a fan of whoever. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Well, I think you got great material and great sound of your own, and however you work it out, I'm sure you will keep on going, keep plugging. I mean, that's what you want to do. Obviously, you've been doing it for 10 years, and that is great. Like you said, you're proud to say it. It's quite an achievement because it's a tough business to be in, but you're doing it because you love it. Obviously, you can tell. And when you're called to do something, you do it no matter what. You find a way, and you're doing it. So congratulations, Jeremy. Really appreciate you coming by. I know you're busy. If people want to get the album, you have the website? Yes?
I do. It's JeremyParsonsMusic.com. You can find everything on there from my socials, and there's a store where you can purchase the CD, and there's a link to Spotify, and got some shows up there and everything. So that's the best place to go.
Terrific. We'll post the link for folks when we post the podcast when it becomes available. Jeremy Parsons, hey, thanks so much. Before you go, we're going to play one more song. This is the latest single, I think. It's Why Is the Bluebird Blue? Do you have a setup for this one?
I do. Yeah, it was we just actually put out a video for this and everything, and it's the story behind it is probably the least intense on the record as far as like from where the idea comes from. I was sitting on the porch playing guitar with my buddy, and he looks over and he goes, "Man, look at that bluebird." I was like, "Man, that's a blue jay. How dare you?" Like, my dad is an ornithology nerd, so I take that stuff offensively. But for some reason, that bluebird thing got stuck in my head, and on the way home, I started coming up with this song, and that's where the root of the song comes from, is me just telling my friend that he was wrong. So.
You never know where the inspiration will come from.
Yeah.
Well, it's a cool song, Why Is the
yeah.
Bluebird Blue? Jeremy Parsons, hey, thanks so much for coming by. Jeremy, good luck to you, okay? Come back and see us.
Hey, thank you so much. You too. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you. You have a great day.
You too. You're very welcome. Jeremy Parsons on the End of the Third Question. Thank you.
Look out my window, what do I see? A little bluebird looking back at me. He sings a song all alone in his nest, and I wonder if he's singing about loneliness. I open my window and take it all in as I listen to a number by my new blue friend. Is he looking for a lover or did one just leave? Does he really feel blue? Does his color just see? Tell me, why is the bluebird blue? Is the song he sings a somber tune? Does he feel like I feel since I lost you? Tell me, why is the bluebird in blue? A hummingbird don't hang around too long. A mockingbird makes a living off of other bird songs. About as low as the bluebird flies. Tell me, why is the bluebird blue? Is a song he sings a somber tune? Does he feel like I feel since I lost you? Tell me, why is the bluebird? Why is the bluebird blue? Is a song he sings a somber tune? Does he feel like I feel since I lost you? Tell me, why? Yeah, baby, why is the bluebird in blue? Tell me, why is the bluebird in blue?
Caroline Rose, a discovery on the Amy Beth Erkley show a couple of years ago, and Blood on Your Boot Heels. Also, Jeremy Parsons, of course, and his latest, Why is a Bluebird Blue, from his new collection, Things I Need to Say. Thanks again to Jeremy. Details on his music, merchandise, tour dates, etc. at jeremyparsonsmusic.com. We'll post a link for you along with the link to the podcast later today when it becomes available. He's got a good sound. I'll tell you, that album is great. No kidding. What's on your mind? Twitter feed is AB Wright's. Phone line is 347-857-4505. Should you find yourself listening live on Tuesday, May 22nd, got the Facebook page or a PopNet chat box open too. We'll take on the cultural cacophony. I mean, there's so much stuff going on, and Trump antics, etc. But mostly we want the music to do the talking today, because that soothes our soul and makes us feel better. We need that. We do, right? Here's Jason Isbell for Natty. It's 24 Frames on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show.
This is how you make yourself vanish into nothing. And this is how you make yourself worthy of the love that she gave to you back when you didn't own a beautiful thing. And this is how you make yourself call your mother. And this is how you make yourself closer to your brother. Remember him back when he was small enough to help you sing. You thought God was an architect, now you know he's something like a pipe bomb ready to blow. And everything you built, it's all for show, goes up in flames in 24 frames. Show you all the things that I own, my treasures, you might say. It couldn't be more than $10 worth. They brighten up my day. This book of poems was given me by a girl I used to know. I guess I read it front to back 50 times or so. It's all about the good life and staying at ease with the world. It's funny how I love that book and I never loved that girl. Step inside this house, girl, I'll sing for you a song. I'll tell you about just where I've been. It shouldn't take too long. I'll show you all the things that I own. My treasures, you might say. It couldn't be more than $10 worth. It brightened up my day. The glass up to the light that's shining through the door. It's a prison glass, I found it on the road. And can't you see that tiny rainbow? It's not really a prison, I guess it just kind of broke a funny way. I was on my way through Houston and I was headed for L.A. Step inside this house, girl, I'll sing for you a song. I'll tell you about just where I've been. It shouldn't take too long. I'll show you all the things that I own. My treasures, you might say. It couldn't be more than $10 worth. They brighten up my day. Guitar was given me by old man Thomas Gray. It's not too much to look at, but I play every day. It's been across this country 4 or 5 times, I guess. Between me and old man Tom, it never got much rest. Step inside this house, girl, I'll sing for you a song. I'll tell you about just where I've been. It shouldn't take too long. I'll show you all the things that I own. My treasures, you might say. It couldn't be more than $10 worth. They brighten up my day. About all that I own, all I care to, I guess. Except this pair of boots, maybe, and that funny yellow vest. And that leather jacket, and that leather bag, and that hat hanging on the wall. Just so it's not too much to carry, babe, could I see you again next fall? Step inside this house, girl, I'll sing for you a song. I'll tell you about just where I've been. It shouldn't take too long. I'll show you all the things that I own. My treasures, you might say. It couldn't be more than $10 worth. It brightened up my day.
Gotta deal with these kooks.
A Hagar is like a watchdog, tossed in a manger. I can feel the protection, deception and anger. And I strode out of there with no one behind me, feeling funny and free. All you pretty pretenders, negligent vendors, aren't you precious inside? Anger with him.
Indigo Girls Reunion on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Beauty from Lyle, love it. Haven't heard in a long time. Step Inside This House. And Jason Isbell's 24 Frame. Strains of all those artists you can hear in the great sound of Jeremy Parsons, our guest earlier today. Twitter feed AB Writes, phone line 347-857-4505, Facebook page, pop in the chat box open, around the social media horn we go. Dondi on Twitter says, great to hear you live, great interview and music. Celeste says, the antidote to all the woes of today's world, great music, great conversation, you've done it again, Amy, thank you. Well, thank you. A couple of folks not so happy with me, though, I got to say. A few people saying you need to be tackling the whole Trump deal on PopNet Chatbox. Dean says, you're like an ostrich with your head in the sand if you don't think we're beyond the constitutional crisis. It's banana republic time with Trump. Yeah, I don't want to be hyperbolic. I think it's serious, for sure. We've railed about it all along. But there's so much talk in the cultural cacophony out there and so much white noise about this stuff. And I just sometimes you need to take a breather from it and just look for common ground, celebrate what we can celebrate, and we'll see. It's going to play out how it's going to play out. I know he's taken some really bizarre measures investigating the investigation. It's more of the same with him, though, isn't it? It's projection deflection. That's what he does. I just don't want to give it too much of my oxygen today. I'm in a creative zone, and we've had a great conversation with Jeremy Parsons and all this great music, which will continue. And our Inspiration to Action Challenge success stories continue to flood in, which I love. Meg from Bar Harbor, Maine today gets the nod. She's talking about poetry. She says, you know, I've always been a poet at heart, shelved my creative juices for a while, but I'm re-embracing things as I've done the challenge and I have more time on my hands. I don't know if I'm particularly good at it or not, or if I ever was, but I certainly find joy and amusement in it, and it's something that's worthwhile to me, which is really the whole point, Meg. So good for you. Congratulations. Keep doing it if you love it, if you find joy from it, if it's cathartic for you, if it gives you a lift to your spirit. You should be doing it, whether you're good. And I bet you are good at it, by the way. But that's not the point, because there's no, you know, we can be objective. We can argue about it. I mean, remember Vincent van Gogh never sold a painting during his lifetime, and he's a master. Considered a master at this point, and his masterpieces go for money that none of us can really afford, right? So it's not about that. It's about finding the joy and reconnecting, and that's what the Inspiration to Action Challenge is about. So if it's working for you, I'd love to give you a shout-out because you deserve it. I like to spear people on, but it also helps other folks. We're giving each other permission to create and be open and be playful in that creative well, because the more you drink from it, the more you're going to come back time and time again. I really believe that. It is really truly the fountain of youth. If you're doing what you want to do, whatever that is, and it doesn't have to be writing. For some people, it's painting or acting or, as I said, gardening, cooking, starting a foundation, but doing other lots of ways to be creative in the world. You know, it's not always a start, but get in there and play and reinvent yourself and reintroduce yourself to your inner child, your inner artist, and just play and be free to do that and give each other permission. That's what we're about. So if you're doing the challenge and if you've done it and it's been working for you, I'd love to give you the shout out. If you need some help and you want to reconnect with that creative source and you find yourself in sort of a slump of some kind, I can help cajole you out of it. Let's start a creativity coaching counseling conversation. First one is always on me. I ask you to give me about 2 weeks to connect because, you know, we get busy around here, but I will do it. I will respond at least by an email. I will let you know you're on my radar and we'll connect somehow and start a conversation. So do it. It's over at the website. It's AmyBethArkawy, ARKAWY.com. Easy access via the Twitter feed, and we will connect that way. And while you're at the website, you can peruse my stories, the Eliza Gordon mysteries, some other goodies are up for grabs. You can also chime in for your guest suggestions, big story, and Forgotten 45 requests. So it's one-stop shopping, and I want to connect with you, and I think getting in, you know, that's part of my life's work, is helping other people find their voices and hone their craft and celebrate their inner artists and free themselves from feeling they can't do it. So I always say let's liberate ourselves from what the finished product is going to be, whether it's good, whether it's not good, whether it's publishable, whether it's sellable, commercial, all that is really, not that it's not important. To some people it's very important, but it's after the fact. The most important thing is to do something and fall in love with the process, because as I will say this, and I said this to myself all the time, and I say it to students and clients, if you fall in love with the process and you love what you're doing, you can't really fail, because you're getting something out of it just by doing it. It's the doing that's so valuable, regardless of where, how big the canvas is, how big the stage is, and how big the bankroll may be. So think of it that way. If you don't like doing it, if you find it to be a slog, if you find it to be a chore, if it's opening up a can of spinach and you don't happen to like spinach, if you love spinach, that's another story. But then maybe that's not the thing you should be doing. You know, a lot of people think they should be doing something. They try to do it. They keep doing it, but they hate it. I don't mean the love and hate relationship that all artists have with our craft, because as a writer, you go through there's moments when it's excruciating, and you do say, what the hell am I doing it for? But there are moments that are so exhilarating that you live for those. and love the process, and it's an exploration and a discovery every single day. That's when it's important. But if it doesn't feel that way to you, then maybe you need to switch, find something else, another activity. I mean, why do it if you hate it all the time? But speaking of great art, I will say I just finished a book and really good books and really good art will change your life in a dime. And I just finished Elizabeth Strout's latest book, Anything is Possible. It is, it seems, and I didn't realize this when I delved into it, and I'm glad I didn't because I don't know if I would have been any here to read it, a sequel of sorts to her book, I Am Lucy Borden, which I have to say, I think I've read most of her books. I don't know if I read all of them, but I found that to be the thinnest of the books. It didn't move me as much. It was a shorter book, and I just didn't feel as connected to the character. This book, Anything is Possible, is a collection of interrelated stories in much the way Olive Kitteridge, which is her Pulitzer Prize-winning masterpiece, I think, and this one almost rivals it. The through line is they're all kind of related, or some of them are related to Lucy Borden in some way. She only appears in one story, where in the Olive Kitteridge, Olive is more of a force or a presence. But this book is sort of more like a Godfather 2 moment, you know, where people said The Godfather 2 is actually the best, the only sequel that's better than the first one. It's not quite a sequel, but it is, to me, so much better, Anything is Possible, than Lucy Borden, because it's so rich in texture and character and emotion, and it evokes so much that it kind of, it's breathtaking and it's heartbreaking. And it's a book where I always find with Strout's work, you have to savor it. And I remember the first book I read of hers, I think was her first or second book, Amy and Isabel. It took me a while to get into it. I think I started it a couple of times, put it down, then started it again. Finally, once I got into a groove, really liked it. And I find that way with all her work. Sometimes it takes a little slow to go at the beginning, but once you're in, it's sort of a rhythm because there's so much rich texture there in terms of the characters and the descriptions that you just want to savor it. And this book was so good. I mean, no kidding. I loved it so much that I took a week off between the second to last story and the last story. I couldn't read the last story because I didn't want to let go of the book. Finally, I did, and I read it, and I loved it, and I love the book. And now I'm rereading, or I just started rereading Olive Kitteridge because I just love her so much. And it just upended the way I look at my own writing, too. And this is what I'm saying. When you read, the more you read, the more you write, they say. And if you read really good stuff, you're going to write better stuff. You know. So I read a variety of things, and sometimes bad writing is inspiring, too, because you're like, hey, I can do better than that. But good writing is so awe-inspiring. Sometimes it's intimidating because it's like, gee, I'll never. It's like Ellen Gilchrist. I'm like, I'll never can write like her. But it also makes you want to try to. And this is what Elizabeth Strout's writing is like. It makes you want to try to. And it also, when I'm at a kind of at a crossroads between projects, and there's a couple of projects pulling me this way and that, and just to think about connecting things and the small things in life and how important they are and how you can make them so beautiful and exhilarating in so many ways, which is what she does. I love this book. It's just great. I mean, her writing is just phenomenal on every level, and this is probably almost as good, if not as good, as Olive Kitteridge, which is saying a lot because that is such a beautiful book. So I don't know that really. Get inspired by something, it can really upend the way you think about things and how you do it. And there was my audition that I had, there was an interview that she did with somebody, and she talked about her process, which I also found fascinating. It's always, you know, we do on this show, when we have writers and artists that come on, we always talk about the process. How do they do it? What inspires them? How do they go about it? And she kind of made me feel better because she writes in snatches and scenes, and the way she writes sometimes is the way I write, and I was like, oh, all right, it works for her, it can work for me. So you can be inspired. As I said, we help each other out as artists, and that's what it's about here for me, to help you the way reading something so phenomenal by somebody like Elizabeth Strout and reading about her process is amazing. Trudy, work on getting her on the show. We'll see what we can do. How about that? My producer, Trudy Earle, we'll see if she can connect with that, but it's so fascinating. So that's what we're about, connecting and handling artists with care.
Been beat up and battered around. Situations tolerable, baby, you're adorable. Handle me with care. I'm so tired of.
took down a photograph of our wedding day, ripped it down the middle and threw my half away, and I got nobody to blame but me. I got nobody to blame but me. She broke all my fishing rods, put my guns in hot, threw my clothes out in the yard and changed out all the locks, and I got nobody to blame but me. I got nobody to blame but me.
Indian tribe. found two babies in the woods. White babies. One of them was named Elizabeth. She was the fairer of the two. While the smaller and more fragile one was named Marie. Having never seen white girls before, and living on the two lakes known as the Twin Lakes, they named the larger and more beautiful lake, Lake Elizabeth. And thus the smaller lake that was hidden from the highway became known forever as Lake Marie. Talking to this girl who was standing there with her back turned to Lake Marie. The wind was blowing, especially through her hair. There was four Italian sausages cooking on the outdoor grill. And man, they were sizzling. Many years later, we found ourselves in Canada, trying to save our marriage and perhaps catch a few fish. Whatever seemed easier. That night she fell asleep in my arms, humming the tune to Louie Louie. In the parking lot by the forest preserve, the police have found two bodies in the woods. Nay, naked bodies. And their faces have been horribly disfigured by some sharp object. Saw it on the news, on the TV news, in a black and white video. You know what blood looks like in a black and white video? Shadows. Shadows! That's exactly what it looks like. All the love we shared between her and me was slammed. Slammed up against the banks of old Lake Marie. Marie!
That song today, right? Are you all right? Lucinda Williams for Haley on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, one of our great Americana storytellers of all time, John Prine, and Lake Marie, recent entry into the storytelling world of Nashville, Chris Stapleton, and Nobody to Blame, Jenny Watson, Jane Lewis, rather, and the Watson twins, upending that great Wilbury's tune, Handle with Care, what all we artists need to do with ourselves, with each other, with art. It's a tricky business. Thanks again to Jeremy Parsons for joining us around the social media horn. A couple of folks chiming in about our show and our conversation. Clive said, great conversation, good music indeed. We'll check out Jeremy's sounds. Do so at jeremyparsonsmusic.com. I'll post the link, as I said, along with the podcast when it becomes available. Celeste chiming in says, thanks for elevating the conversation. You're right, music and art take precedence over the nonsense of the day. Well, there's room for everything, Celeste, but today was just felt like a special day to kind of elevate ourselves for a while. Lindy on PopNet chat box echoing that, saying it's time to rise above what you would call the cultural cacophony and celebrate music and art and transcend it in such a way. Thank you for being so impassioned and passionate about it. Well, I try, and sometimes I am, and I do mean that. Music can really transform and transcend a lot of the nonsense, and we need it sometimes. I mean, I can easily get swept up, and I will, another show, another day. You know that, but let's take it as we go, as they say. Hey, don't forget all the Amy Beth Erkley shows. Amy Beth Erkley shows, yeah, they're archived for podcasts. You can follow us on the BTR site, on Mixcloud, on Stitcher. Download episodes at iTunes and NetNow. All roads lead back to our website, amybetherkley.com. And there are also going to listen to select editions on the Arts Radio Network and PopNet, where we have those robust roundtables, another one coming up, I think, Wednesday or Thursday, details via social media. So there we'll get into more of this hyperbolic nonsense that's going out in the culture of the cacophony. I get to do it both. I'm lucky that way, sort of, right? Hey, you want to connect, do so via Facebook, of course. Friend me there. You can follow our producer, Trudy Hart, on Twitter at Radio Trudy, and you can follow me on Twitter for the 24/7 conversation at AB Writes. There you go. In the meantime, thank you, TCS crew, by the way, Trudy and Aurora in the booth, MLA headquarters. Thank you for playing with us in real time. Always appreciate the input, whatever you do it, of course. And in the meantime, drive safe, play nice, dream big. Come back and see us on the Amy Beth Erkley Show as we all go in search of those wide open spaces. Leave you with the Dixie Chicks. I love you all. Take care.
Never left home, who's never struck out to find a dream and a life of their own. A place in the clouds, a foundation of soul. Many precede and many will follow. A young girl's dreams no longer hollow. Out the window and says, I'm leaving my girl. She said it didn't seem